Hello, I'm Dango Rose, and you're listening to the Mountaineer Podcast in conjunction with the Mountaineer Newspaper, the voice of the Peak to Peak, online and in print. Brought to you by Mountain Vale Media. Now, listen in for the show.
Jamie Lammers, and welcome to this week's edition of the Mountaineer Podcast, Music of the Mountains, where to be and what to see. Our musical guest for the week, do you mind introducing yourself real quick?
My name is Noah G. Fowler. I'm originally from Carlisle, Pennsylvania. For the last few years, I've lived in Nashville as a singer-songwriter and touring musician. Yeah, and I'm playing at the Gold Hill General Store not too long.
So how exactly did your musical journey start, Noah?
Yeah, well, my entire musical journey began in public schools. I went to public school and we had a very tiny orchestra program when I was in elementary school. One of those deals where they had a couple violins, a couple violas, and one upright bass, and you kind of had to do a lottery for it. A bunch of kids would put their names in and they'd draw the names at the start of the school year, and whoever got it, got it. And I was uncontested as the only person that wanted to play the upright bass. So my introduction was taking lessons at my school, playing upright bass in the orchestra, which for 8-year-olds is just playing Row Row, Little Boat, and Boil 'em Cabbage Down, and the kind of easy stuff. And then whenever I was in high school, my school had a sort of coffee house program where students could sign up and play either original music or cover songs. And I was interested in writing music and playing cover songs and all that stuff. So I ended up getting into that. And that ended up being the only thing I really cared about when I was in school, was just when the next coffee house was and how many bands I would make for it and how many songs I would do and what the songs would be, and I'd be trying to write stuff. And I kept playing upright bass throughout the whole thing, and I also learned guitar and drums and piano and pretty much anything I could get my hands on that the school had. And yeah, did that through high school. I got accepted with a scholarship to Berklee College of Music, but before going there, I did a few semesters at a trade school up in Canada that you could learn to be a framing carpenter, a welder, an electrician, or a folk musician. And they taught folk music through the tradition of Celtic fiddle and a lot of the Canadian folk storytellers and a lot of what was popular on that. I should back up a little bit. It was in Prince Edward Island, which I mentioned earlier, the fiddle stuff, basically. If you don't really know a whole lot about it, it's a really cool music tradition because the island is populated pretty much entirely by the descendants of Irish refugees that left during the potato famine. And the island was really isolated for most of its history. And basically, if you wanted to get to the island, there was like one boat per week that would take you there and back, and that was it until the late 1980s when they finally built a bridge. So for about 200 years, it was just really one group of people there without any mixing and matching. No one was really coming or going. So they had a really well-preserved fiddle tradition for old-time Celtic music. And that was what the school was really known for, was that you got to participate in that kind of old-time fiddle situation. And another added element that was really cool was that there was a lot of actual Irish fiddle players from Ireland that would travel to Prince Edward Island, hang out in the jam sessions, and relearn fiddle tunes that had been forgotten in Ireland but were still alive in Canada. And so I fell in love with folk music through that, and that kind of got me reintroduced to bluegrass music, which I listened to a lot growing up. And once I was done with the Canadian winters, I transferred finally to Berklee, where I had the scholarship and studied bluegrass in Berklee's American Roots program, but that got cut short because of the pandemic. So I ended up going home for a little bit and working and saving money, and eventually I saved enough that I moved to Nashville. And once I got here, I was really pursuing bluegrass music, and then just by being here, I ended up wandering into one too many honky-tonks and fell in love with country music. And by country music, I don't mean Morgan Wallen or the new stuff. I mean the music of Ray Price and George Jones and Bob Wills and Willie Nelson, John Prine, a lot of the great storytellers that made some of the best recorded music in American history. And yeah, the last few years of my life have just been pouring through countless old country records, trying to learn what I can from them, from the arrangement, from the storytelling, from the lyrical structure. That's a very long explanation of how I got into music, but yeah, that's pretty much it. Yeah, that about sums it up.
Along that musical journey, were there any particular influences that have stuck out to you?
Yeah, I would say probably my biggest influence that I just cannot shake would be the music of John Prine. I feel like no matter how hard I try, if I try to write something different, there's some influence of John Prine in pretty much everything I write. And his music was really special because the lyrics stood on their own, and then as his career went on, the aesthetics and the arrangement and the sound would change, but his lyrics were always timeless and the best ever. So he recorded bluegrass and country, even some 80s rock kind of stuff, but it was always John Prine. And his music had a huge impact on me and the way that I write. And yeah, I just recorded a whole bunch of stuff. And if you're as big of a John Prine nerd as I am, and a lot of my friends are down here, you can almost draw, oh, I see you got this kind of idea for how to tell this story, the way it's presented from this John Prine thing. And it's completely unintentional. But the way that stories are told is such a subtle thing. It's not like when you start writing songs, you write all the train songs and all the, oh, I'm so heartbroken songs. And you write a bunch of those, and then you're like, I never want to write that again. And the influences of John Prine on my music is so subtle. It's not like, well, I'm deciding from here on out, I'm not writing about trains anymore. Or from here on out, I'm not writing any of this. It's like, no matter how hard I try, just the way that his lyrics are presented and his stories are told, it's become a pillar of the way that I tell stories. And I would say the same for Willie Nelson. He's also a big influence on my music, especially his records from the late 60s through the 70s, pretty much right before he got with Waylon and right after he was emancipated from the artistic rigidness of Chet Atkins. I don't know how familiar you are with the history of Willie Nelson and Chet Atkins and the album Redheaded Stranger. That's not a part of my story, so I won't go into the whole thing, but that particular era of Willie Nelson, sort of post-Nashville, but pre-Outlaw, those four or five records left a huge impact on my musical storytelling, and they also left a huge impact on the way that I arrange my music beyond the words. Whenever I'm in the studio, I'm the arranger on all my own stuff. I write everything out on paper, and I come up with all the parts, and all of that is set to I don't want to say a blueprint, because it's not that rigid, but it's one of those things where if you hear enough old Willie Nelson records, stuff starts to make sense. And I would say the same even going back to just strictly speaking arrangements. If you dig into a lot of Ray Price records from the late 40s and early 50s, the way that those albums were arranged in the early days of Nashville with that same group of session players just churning out hit after hit and working on all these incredible songs that at the time were truly groundbreaking. I mean, I could go on and on about all the things that influenced my music. I almost kind of forget what the question is now. But yeah, I would say John Prine and Willie Nelson are probably my two biggest influences in the way that I make music, in the way that I write music, and the way that I choose to present my music in a recorded form.
It appears that you really love delving into the history behind some of your favorite artists and styles of music. Has it influenced your musical journey along the way?
Yeah, I would say it's affected me artistically by understanding the context of the music that I love and how it got to be made. It makes it more special to me, but it hasn't really affected anything outside of that, just because the world today is so different from what the world was when those records are being made, for better and for worse. For worse, right now, musicians have to rely on TikTok and Instagram algorithms to get any kind of exposure. But for better, I have access to pretty much every song that's ever been released, and I have just an endless pool of inspiration that wasn't available to the people that I look up to musically. So yeah, I would say it's influenced me artistically, but not really outside of that.
Are there any stylistic choices that are prevalent throughout all of your songs?
Yeah, well, I'd say the one style that 9 out of the 10 songs that I write would be that they're all telling a story. I'm definitely a storytelling songwriter. People say everybody has different classifications. Oh, there's like a storytelling songwriter, there's like a poetic songwriter, tell it how it is songwriter, all that stuff. I would say 9 out of the 10 songs I write have to do with with a story that I either wrote and came up with, or something that's either real from less often my life. I don't really write autobiographically too much. A lot of my songs that I've written have a historical inspiration. Especially, I've written a lot about history of South Central Pennsylvania, where I come from. And if you look online, if I can throw a little plug in here, I did a video with a local filmmaker of a song that I wrote called The Ballad of Centralia, which is all about the Molly Maguires and the town of Centralia, which is some of the craziest, most tumultuous and intense scenes in the history of South Central Pennsylvania. And it's a story that really hasn't been told that many times. So it's one of those things where I feel like I'm both being original and also very not original at the same time, because my presentation of this story that's been around for, one part of the story has been around for hundreds of years, the other part's been around for about 70 or 80 years. It's sort of a timeless thing that I try to tap into. And I've written, yeah, a lot. I kind of like listening to other songwriters. There's a lot of Civil War songs that have been written, and some of them have different political agendas and stuff. But I feel like I have a unique license because I grew up so close to the Gettysburg battlefields, and the Battle of Gettysburg actually occurred, a part of it, in my hometown. And growing up, we would take tours of downtown Carlisle, and one of the main things was always that we had an old courthouse that actually got shelled by the Confederate Army while they occupied Carlisle, and there's still battle scars on these buildings from the cannons. I've written a song inspired by that. And so, yeah, the list goes on. I've written so many songs about history and characters in South Central Pennsylvania, but also I've written a ton about history from other regions. I want to dig more into Colorado, the history of the West. It's something that it's been done a lot, especially in country Western music. It's almost fetishized to talk about cowboys and whatever, all these stories of the Old West. And so I haven't gotten to it yet because I feel like I need to listen through everything Marty Robbins has ever done just so I can understand what has already been done 80 years ago before I even start now to do that, because I don't want to just redo something that's been done. I want to have my own take on it. So I guess while I'm out there, I'm going to be trying to maybe collect some stories that haven't been told yet to write about that.
Do you perform covers, originals, or a mix of both?
It really depends on the venue. I try to mostly do shows where I'm playing entirely original music, but at the same time, I love just going into a dive bar and playing George Jones songs for 3 hours, you know? There's really a time and a place for both aspects. For example, in Nashville, I'm playing at a venue called the East Room, which is like a listening room where I'm going to play all original music. But then there's other gigs down here, like Acme Feed and Seed or Robert's Western World, venues that have been around a long time that are purely about preserving the old musical traditions and keeping them alive. If I'm playing in those places, yeah, it's just about playing 4 hours of music from the 30s through the 70s. And yeah, so it depends on the gig. Sometimes I do a little bit of both. It really just depends on what the crowd is expecting and what I'm being paid for.
So you said you're embarking on a major U.S. tour. Have you toured before?
Yeah, I've been touring pretty much nonstop for the last 3-4 years. I do it all myself. I've been doing this all on my own for a long time. And yeah, so what appeals to me is just the fact that, I don't know, this country is huge and there's so many people, and it's such a privilege to go out and go from town to town, state to state, from community to community, and play my music and have it be received by all these people. And for me, the traveler, the one who goes from place to place, I feel like I can see the ways in which people and places are the same, and also the ways that they're different. The way that a crowd in Colorado enjoys music is very different from the way that a crowd in Texas enjoys music, which is very different from the way that a crowd in New England enjoys music. But it's all the same music. I'm playing the same set list. And the thing I love the most about it is just getting to travel and see those things and experience them for myself. And then another added bonus is whenever I talk to other people who are really well traveled, especially musicians, we can kind of be like, oh, you've been to Asheville. Have you gone two-stepping at the Double Crown? You can find these really cool experiences and places and things that make a city what it is, and you can relate to those with other people that have known them. And there's musicians that have been doing this for years and years and years, and it's just really cool to compare those experiences. experiences. Just recently, last time I was in Colorado, I played at a spot called the Skylark in Denver, and it was a great show. And what was cool about it was then when I came back and people were like, hey, where'd you play in Denver? And I said, oh, I played at the Skylark. It seemed like everybody I talked to had a really good memory of that place. They're like, oh, I was in the Skylark 5 years ago and this happened. It was such a great night. And it's something that I think ties human beings together, is these common points of reference for the experience of life, and especially the experience of being in America and being on planet Earth. Is we're all these unassociated beings, but by traveling and meeting so many different people and being in these different places, it gives you a connection to this thing that's bigger than all of us. And when I'm traveling, that's my connection to that thing, whatever it is. I hope I didn't get too abstract or profound, but that's the feeling I'm getting at, I guess.
In sharing these common experiences with all of your shows, is there anything that you hope generally that audience members will take away from the shows?
I hope that they feel seen through me telling a story of somebody else. It's kind of a similar thing I was talking about with the travel. We're all beings looking for some kind of common association or common experience. I write a lot about work. Whenever I'm not traveling, I find work doing odd jobs as a handyman. And I've worked in warehouses before. I've worked for a construction company before. And I've also been a student before and done that kind of work, academic work. And I feel like whenever I tell these stories, whether they're fictional or real, when I tell the story of a character, people relate to it, or at least that's the idea, is that they'll relate to it and they'll feel that sense of belonging or that sense of connection, and kind of that thing I was describing before with like travel, where I go and I see all these things and it's a connection to this greater experience. I guess my music, what I'm really truly trying to do, what I hope people get from it, is me reporting or sharing that thing, that experience, that whatever I'm trying to, I wish there was a word for it, or if there is, I figure out what it is, because that would make it easier to say this in less words. But I hope people get that feeling from my songs, from these stories. They feel connected to a thing bigger than themselves and to these stories, and that they feel seen, and that they feel like their lives are an important piece in this huge human history and everything puzzle, or this big, whatever metaphor you want to use, this larger experience. I hope they feel a part of it through my music.
Is there anything else you'd like to add before we sign off?
Yeah, I just got done recording a bunch of music. I'm putting the first single out February 20th, right before I head out to Folk Alliance. I would say, yeah, just I would love to promote the fact that I got music coming out, and I would love people to listen to it, and I hope they like it.
Thank you so much to Noah for coming on board and joining us for the podcast. For full transparency's sake, we recorded this interview all the way back in February, when Noah was just about to release his new single Hammer on February 20th. Now, a new single has just come out. The Little Church with the Biggest Parking Lot was released on April 19th, and you can stream it wherever you get your music now. You can also check out more of his music, figure out when more of his music is releasing, and see more of his tour dates on his website at noahgfowler.com. And if you want to see him perform in the Peak to Peak area, you can catch him at the Gold Hill General Store on 531 Main Street in Gold Hill on Friday, May 3rd, 2024 at 7 p.m.
Pan in the rain, now my poor heart's got nowhere left to go. Well, I wish that I was driving.
And now, for this week's Music Mentions. Head to the Dino Barnett, located at 121 North Jefferson Street in Nederland, every Wednesday at 8 p.m. for a karaoke night. Head to the Gold Hill General Store, located at 531 Main Street in Gold Hill, on Saturday, April 27th at 7 p.m. to see House Cats performing live. Head to Howlin' Wind Brewing, located at 51A Main Street in Rollinsville, on Saturday, April 27th at 4 p.m. to see Stone Hall performing live. Head to the Jamestown Mercantile, located at 108 Main Street in Jamestown, on Friday, April 26th at 7 p.m. to see a performance from Meredith Marie and Guy Tights Duo. On Sunday, April 28th at noon to see Ben Hanna. On Wednesday, May 1st at 5 p.m. for an open mic night. And on Thursday, May 2nd at 7 p.m. to see the 5 Foot Bettys performing live. Head to Knotted Root Brewing, located at 250 North Caribou Street in Nederland, on Friday, April 26th at 5 p.m. for an album release party from John Ridnell. Also be sure to head there every Sunday at 5 p.m. for Jazz Sundays. Head to the Old Gallery at Allens Park, located at 14863 State Highway 7 in Allens Park, on Friday, April 26th at 6 p.m. to see an open mic with Tim Merkel. Head to the Caribou Room, located 55 Indian Peaks Drive in Nederland, on Friday, April 26th, to see Chain Station performing with Woodbelly. Doors open and dinner starts at 7 p.m. and the show starts at 8 p.m. And finally, head to the Very Nice Brewing Company, located at 20 East Lakeview Drive, number 112 in Nederland, on Friday, April 26th at 6 p.m. to see Stonehall performing live, and on Saturday, April 27th at 5 p.m. to see Magnum Mike performing live. Did we miss you or your performance? Want to submit your music listing in the Peak to Peak area? Do you have updates to your business or to your performances? Please call 303-810-5409 or email info@themountaineer.com to be included in the next print edition or the next podcast of The Mountain Ear.
And that's it for our show. Subscribe online to get access to more news, weekly updates to our community calendar, and a link to our YouTube channel by visiting themountaineer.com. Be sure to use the coupon code PODCAST when subscribing for a 10% discount, only available to our listeners. I'm Dango Rose. Thank you for listening.